It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You found VSiN's premier baseball betting show. This is The Run Line.
Welcome back in here for the second hour of The Run Line. I'm your host tonight, Adam Burke, joined on the desk by former Major League pitcher Josh Towers as we look on a 6-3 game here. Sunday Night Baseball with the Yankees and the Red Sox. Live number, Yankees, a $12 favorite, -1200, actually -1100 now with that last play in that game. Total still 14.5 in the 6-3 game.
So we talked about Matt Carpenter and the success he's having this year, and he's probably hitting over, where is he at now? So he just bunted, right? There's one out, there's a run on first, and all of a sudden Carp lays down a bunt. Now there's first and second, one out. The Matt Carpenter, the unsuccessful Matt Carpenter in St. Louis with the shift, said, I'm not bunting. I'm never going to bunt. He did once when he was struggling. He started hitting 100 and he bunted. I think he had a double, to be honest with you. Why bunt and go a single when I can hit doubles and home runs? And then all of a sudden he's hitting like 100, and that's when his career kind of went downhill. He was anti-bunting. He's too good for it. Now he's on the Yankees on a winning team again. He's having fun, and now he's willing to bunt on his own in a one-out game in the fifth inning? There's a difference, right? How do we handicap Matt Carpenter's mentality? I mean, sometimes watching quotes and listening to what they say tells us a lot about a person, but there's the difference. Again, we saw Matt Carpenter, wouldn't do it, wouldn't help the Cardinals, wouldn't, even if it benefited him, wouldn't do it, but now he's willing to do it with New York. Come on, man.
Well, I personally, as a data guy, would say I would never bunt at Fenway Park just because it's such a great place for offense. But
such a great place.
You know, to your point, I mean, look, you know, you kind of look for these little cues and these little things that you can find in these games, and it seems like you found one there with Matt Carpenter and the Yankees. But I want to continue that discussion that we had in the previous segment there, talking about, you know, starting pitchers and kind of the expectations of them, what we should be looking for in terms of, you know, pitch counts, going through the order a third time, All of that. So the second half, I think, is really where we're going to find out a lot about some of these young arms, particularly a guy like Shane McClanahan, who last year topped out at 123 and a third innings. He's already thrown 104 and a third this year. And we've already kind of discussed guys really aren't built to throw 200-inning seasons anymore. Usually you're kind of looking at 150, 160, and you're hoping that that's enough. So as a pitcher, right, we know pitchers are never really feeling all that great. They're never 100% healthy. The strain put on the arm from doing the job is just very, very high. What do you think about these guys going into the second half that are going to be reaching, you know, new career highs, having new expectations, and being expected to perform, you know, as well as they did earlier on in the season?
Let me jump real quick. We all have like aches and pains, right? But we also get really good when we're on rotation every 5 days of putting our body in a position to feel really good on the day we pitch. Now, I may not have my best stuff. It's more of like, there's going to be a pitch or two missing. Very rarely do you ever take them out and say I have 4 or 5 pitches and they're all there. It's very rare, right? Which is why we learn. And we're not trying to throw every pitch. There's a rhyme and reason why we throw each pitch. And this situation may call for it, may not call for it, but I have it in case it does. But sometimes it's not there. And so, again, you learn how to pitch. As far as like battling like my arm hurts or something like that, like that's not really the case. Yes, we do battle that, but consistently we probably, body-wise, we feel good. This is the tough thing in our era, right? The more we throw, the better we feel. If you would let us throw 300 innings, more guys would feel better and be a lot more successful. But we live in an era where we pay them so much money that we don't want them to get hurt. In any walk of life, I don't care who it is or what you do. If you are going through your day and trying to prevent yourself from getting injured, you're not going to be very successful at whatever it is. You're going to cause more injuries. Like, you got to just go ahead and listen. We train very specifically for a very long time year round to try not to get hurt, to have our best stuff. And then you're kind of like asking me not to do that as I'm playing because you don't want me to get hurt. And you're putting me in a position where I'm not just reacting and letting my skill set and my strength take on. So if they would let guys pitch more, we would see less injuries, and I think we would see a lot better pitching, right? It's like counterintuitive, but I'm paying you $30-40 million a year. I'm nervous. And one little hiccup, it's tough. And so the innings thing gets tough because you're talking about McClanahan. I think 130 was his career high, maybe. He's close to it. And so what do they let Shane go 200 out of nowhere? And what does 70 extra innings on a guy at a major league level do if he's never thrown 70 extra innings before? We don't know. Because there's no, like, we all say, I only wanted to add 25 or 30, but there's no true data that says he's going to get hurt or he's not going to get hurt. He's going to get worse or he's not going to get worse, right? You have to learn how to get through a season at the major league level. And in the minor leagues, we play 5 months. In the big leagues, we play 6 months. And it's a lot more meaningful baseball to an extent. I have to learn how to back off my workouts, when to add to my workouts, when to back off my running, when to add to my running, when to take days off, when to, I'm going to push it today. Like, I have to learn all this, and that takes a lot of time. And that's where the true Shane McClanahan probably could go 200 innings this year and not have a problem, but do they know how to, and does he know his body well enough to do that? Because it's not necessarily the inning adding out of nowhere, right? And so, again, we've seen it with Strasburg in the past. When he first came up, they would let, they cut him back on his innings by the time they got to the postseason, so I don't think Steven pitched in the postseason. But yet they were letting him throw 100 pitches in 5 innings, which is the worst thing you can do for your arm because it's just too massive amount of pitches in such a short amount of time, right? It's bad. If you ever see, by the way, a pitcher getting into the 90s of pitches in the fifth inning, he's going to give up a run in that fifth inning every single time. It's just too much. There goes our third time to the lineup thing where it gets inflated, right? Mm-hmm. Those are all things that we have to look at as well as an organization. So, again, McClanahan, he's had very, very few stressful games, if any, but he's had very few stressful innings, if any. So his increase in innings and pitch count, I don't think personally, just by looking at it blankly, it's not that big of a deal because he's not having stressful innings. He's having very relaxed, very dominant innings, which is a massive difference as well.
Well, I think something that I always look at, I look at data like spin rate, I look at velocity, mm-hmm. I look for things that kind of showcase that maybe a pitcher is getting tired, that there's an underlying injury, that there's, you know, that there's some sort of mechanical issue, something like yes. that. You think about it today, Michael Kopech, for example, 72 and two-thirds innings going into today's start, only threw 69 and a third in 2021, didn't really do anything in 2019 or 2020 because he was hurt. Today, his fastball velocity was down about 3 miles per hour early in his start.
He was also starting relieving too, right?
Not this year.
Not this year, but in the past.
But that was a glaring red flag for me, at least in terms of looking at him for his next start. But as we look at that Cy Young board, I think it's really important to talk about this here. McClanahan is the favorite plus 250, Justin Verlander plus 275. Alek Manoah, who, unless he gets shelled in his upcoming start this week, he will set a career high in innings. He's thrown 107 and two-thirds. He threw 111 and two-thirds last year, so he'll set a career high at the MLB level. Garrett Cole, 8-1. Shohei Ohtani, who's topped out at 130 and a third innings, he's 12-1 to win the Cy Young, but he's starting to approach that point where maybe the Angels kind of err on the side of caution. And I think it's something that we have to talk about here with this Cy Young race because we don't know what the Rays' plan is with Shane McClanahan, and if their offense continues to struggle with Wander Franco hurt, maybe they kind of fall out of that wild card race a little bit and they scale him back. Do the Blue Jays do that with Alek Manoah and maybe go six-man rotation, protect him a little bit? But we do know that Justin Verlander and Garrett Cole have had 200-inning seasons in the past.
All right, if I mix a team, you remind me of that team. If Tampa Bay's still in the race, and unless Tampa Bay goes and gets another starter, or Glasnow can come back and actually be productive and give innings, if they don't get another starter, if Tyler doesn't come back, and they're still in this to make the postseason, we're not going to see Shane McClanahan get backed off that much because they have no other option. All right, go to Alek Manoah. The Blue Jays are built to win right now. They're a couple years down the road. It was a couple years ago. They're built to win right now. Yusei Kikuchi not getting it done. Berrios not getting it done. All right? They don't have a choice with Alek Manoah. They have no choice with him. They have to ride him at this point. Because if they shut him down, they're dead, right? So they're going to be forced to ride Manoah a little bit longer than maybe they initially wanted because they're in a position where they have to make the postseason this year. Who was the other team? Oh, Angels, Ohtani. The Angels are the worst team in baseball since May 15th. Right. They're 11-32. You already talked about two wins since last month. They're awful at baseball. They have no idea what baseball is. They have no idea that pitching and defense wins. They think they can invest in all this money. And all the money they have wrapped up in their hitters, only two of them are in the lineup. And one of them is their best pitcher. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. They have no clue. So, again, I have Shohei under contract for next year. And at some point I'm going to have to really pay him or he's been around the league twice, three times. He knows where he wants to play next, right? And it's going to cost a lot of money. You got Rendon, you got Trout, you got all these guys making a ton of money. Can they truly afford to keep him? With that said, they still feel like, I don't know how they feel like this, but they still feel like they should be winning and making the postseason. So they're going to think that next year they're going to be in the postseason again, right? They continue to be this god-awful. There's no way Ohtani is going to pitch a lot of innings this year. He'll hit, he'll DH, but they're going to back him off at some point. So then I'm looking at the Cy Young race and I'm going, Shohei is on pace to like, yeah, he can do this because how dominant he's been. But then I'm like, they're the Angels, and they're going to be in last place, and there's no way they're going to run him and risk injury again with him. Right, so then I got to look at all these things when it factors into – and I've always thought the Rays were going to back Shane off, but at this point, like, they can't afford to because no one else is doing a job for them, and they're still in contention, right?
The one thing I will say about the Rays, they've only had eight guys throw at least 130 innings as a starter dating back to 2016.
Sad.
Chris Archer did it twice. He's been hurt a ton. Ryan Yarbrough did it last year, and he's been banged up this year and also been pretty ineffective.
So
Charlie Morton was one, but you know, obviously he's a veteran guy. Blake Snell was another one.
And they let Charlie pitch.
Had the elbow injury the next year, and then they traded him. That's what concerns me about the Rays, is that if they look back at their history of kind of stretching guys out a little bit, none of those guys have really handled it well in future seasons. Maybe McClanahan's not a guy that they want to play around with this season.
Yeah. Again, they clearly know how to I don't even know how to say it. Give me everybody that throws 97 and harder, and I'm going to run through a lot of them. We'll be successful. They've never really handled a starting staff very well at all. And, which is mind-blowing to me because I'm telling you, Kevin Cash behind the dish as a catcher for me for many years was arguably the best I've ever thrown to. He's on that top three list. And he knew how to get us deep in games. He was genius.
Well, coming up after the break, something in this town that you could probably play a lot. Real or fake? We're going to talk about a couple of hitters, one having a good year, one not having a good year. We'll talk about whether or not we expect that performance to continue here on The Run Line on VSiN, the sports betting network.
You found VSiN's premier baseball betting show. This is...
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we got to give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are going to be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Run Line.
Starting on Monday, VSiN will be having its first ever baseball betting pentathlon. Every show, not this one, but every other show besides Lombardi Line and My Guys in the Desert, will be making five baseball bets over a span of 4 days to determine which show at VSiN is the best at betting baseball. On Monday, you'll have to bet a total. Tuesday, an underdog and a favorite. Wednesday, pick a team on the run line. And Thursday, a prop. The winner will be announced on Friday, July 15th at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Follow the Money. As I said, the run line, not part of it. However, I am. So doing that, I guess, as a ringer, maybe. Is kind of my role here, I guess.
We can three-head monster this thing?
I will be texting you to... I will be consulting with you.
The one that I like is picking a dog. I like that one.
Yeah, I like that too. Definitely a very fun thing. Should be a good tournament here. We'll see how things play out. For all of the VSiN shows. And speaking of things playing out, JD Martinez.
Wait, and speaking of dogs, what was the line a couple minutes ago? When you said it was like plus 800, plus 1200 or something?
I think the Red Sox were as high as like plus 700, plus 800 here in this one. And it's now a 6-6 game. Live number minus 115 both ways at DraftKings. Live total 15.5 here as we're in the fifth inning.
What am I missing here? What's going on? I need you to explain some stuff.
Is that Aroldis Chapman?
Apparently, I don't watch enough Yankee baseball. They blew the game last night. Peralta seems like he's been closing a little bit. He blew the game last night. Tyone's been struggling. We talked about that coming in. He's been struggling. And you know, sometimes you're able to lock back in or you get a little bit more comfortable when you get a 6-2 lead, but obviously not for him. And they kept letting Boston come back. Either way, it's 6-6, and Aroldis Chapman's getting loose in the bullpen in the fifth inning. What am I missing?
Well, he's coming back from injury, and he wasn't all that effective before the injury. He's pitched a couple times in low leverage, thrown 21 pitches over Wednesday and Tuesday. He actually appeared, but
it takes. Okay, so cut you off. Sorry. If I'm getting loose because I'm a starting pitcher and that's what I do, it takes me 6 minutes, 8 minutes to play catch. It takes me about 8 minutes to a bullpen. My bullpen's 55 pitches, which is a lot for some people. And then I go in and we start the game. As a reliever, they don't have that luxury. They 12, 13, 15 pitches, sometimes maybe more if they have more time, but they got to go, right? Mm-hmm. He's used to going. I know they want to give him a fresh inning more than anything, but like you're asking him, he doesn't even stretch till the fifth inning. He might not even come out of clubhouse till the fifth inning.
Right.
And now all of a sudden you have him up. To me, this is worse than if I'm putting him back in that closer's role. If he's back in a major league uniform in a dugout, he should be fine to pitch. And again, like at this point, you have to have somebody else get loose. Just in case Jameson can't get out of this inning, that guy comes in to finish this inning, and then you give Aroldis a fresh inning to take his time to get loose. I don't know if I agree with what's going on here.
Well, it looks like they're calling to check and see if Aroldis Chapman's ready to go, which is very interesting to say the least here, especially as you mentioned, for a guy who's accustomed to coming in the ninth inning. Looks like he may have to come in the fifth or at a minimum here, the sixth inning on Sunday Night Baseball. And again, interesting implications here for Boston, because now this is a 6-6 game. They probably brought in a low leverage reliever after they took Pivetta out of the game. They got to fly to Tampa after this one and go play the Rays tomorrow. So could be an interesting spot there for Boston. We'll talk more about that game in the final segment here of today's show.
It's Ort. It's Caleb Ort who they brought in. This is his first game. 1 2/3. Career second game. This is his first game. Before you move on, let me pull something real quick.
See, this is always an interesting thing for me because, I mean, I generally disagree with managerial decisions, but now, I mean, your offense just got you back in the game. I'm not bringing that kid back out. I'm going to a more trusted arm.
So then let's go. Yeah. This is the stuff for me in baseball. All right. Caleb Ort, AAA last 2 years. Really good. 298, 312. You know what else is really good? 19 for 21 in saves, and this year, 15 for 17 in saves. He's a closer. And you're going to pitch him more than one inning already in the fifth inning or the fourth inning of a Major League Baseball game when he's used to pitching the back end of a game, you better pull him. Because if you try to stretch this guy who's not a starter, you're putting him in a situation he's never been. Caleb Ort right now, is running off pure adrenaline and excitement from the fans and being in the big leagues. This, like, again, so you and I are trying to handicap stuff, looking at bullpens and when they got taxed, because we're looking ahead to tomorrow as well. All this stuff becomes very important because, like, again, I'm putting him in a position he has not been in years. Mm. He's a closer just like Chapman. I have two closers coming in the fourth and fifth inning, sixth inning-ish of a Major League Baseball game. It makes no sense. It just tells you that the Red Sox are hurting for pitching.
Yeah, certainly looks like it, and we'll see what happens here in this one. And also, it does look like Aroldis Chapman will get that clean inning potentially for the sixth here. But I want to do the real or fake segment. Talk about a couple of hitters this time. We generally talk about pitchers during this real or fake segment, but today I want to talk about a couple of hitters here. One of them for the, we can't even call them red hot, white hot? I don't know, whatever we want to call the Atlanta Braves here, because they've been just absolutely on fire for the last basically 4 or 5 weeks. And a big part of it has been Dansby Swanson, their shortstop, batting .299 with a .355 on base, .488 slugging percentage going into today's game, .366, weighted on base average, .134 WRC+. Josh, this is a guy that, in a full season, getting at least 500 plate appearances, has never been an above-average hitter by WRC+. Never had a mark over 100. Only in the 60-game season back in 2020, the COVID-shortened year, did he have a 115 WRC plus, meaning he was 15% better than league average. This guy, on the year, going into Friday's game, batting .344 on fastballs, four-seam, two-seam, cutter, and sinker, and with a .623 slugging percentage. Why is anyone throwing this kid a fastball?
Well, they got some pretty good hitters in that lineup.
It's true. They right? do. I guess you got to pitch to somebody,
you
right?
You got to pitch to somebody. He is having a good year. What are the chances this is his contract year?
That's a good question.
Probably pretty good.
Free agent. yeah, I think so. Actually, I think you're right.
He's hitting .302. He's got 14. I mean, think about the year before. He had 27 home runs. And anytime you start trying to hit more home runs, your average is always going to go down because you start to be pull happy and not use the whole field. He did the same thing in 19, shortened year. I know in 19 he was also hurt. He had some minor league time where he was rehabbing and stuff. And then, obviously 20 and then the half season, and then you get back in the swing of things. And last year, they just everybody seemed to start slow for that team and pick back up as the season went on. So I'd be curious to see his second half stats from last year. But, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he's on contract here.
He is. You're absolutely right. Make it $10 million this year, hits free agency at the end of the season. 46.4% hard hit percentage, though, carrying a .384 batting average on balls in play. So probably not something that I would expect to continue in the second half, but if teams are going to keep throwing him fastballs, then I guess that may.
I mean, you got Austin Riley heating up, and you got Acuna leading off, and you got Greg Olson, and I mean, the whole team. Travis is a good hitter as well as being a good catcher. Like, the whole team can hit. They raked last year. They had Freddie. I mean, again, Maddox always said it. You got to get your 27 out somewhere, and none of them are with Barry Bonds. So he's not where I'm going to try to get that out. I'm pitching around him. And at some point, I got to go at somebody. I can only pitch around so many people for too long. And there's something about contract year, man. I mean, you go back to the history of baseball and look at it. There's something about contract year that we stay in a little bit more. We get a little bit more sleep. We eat a little bit better. We go to the field a little earlier. We all want to be paid, man.
Seems like it's working out pretty well for Aaron Judge, also in a contract year.
Yeah, I still think he made more money last year if he took that contract. I mean, he's going to be 31, right? It's tough for him, but you're right. I mean, but again, to your point, it's the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. Is he turned down a massive deal because he wanted whatever he wanted more. I don't know what he wanted more, whether it's long-term or average salary per year. But, now he has to back it up, and there's something about that. Like, there's a challenge accepted. All right, here we go. And he's doing it.
All right, so a guy that just signed a big contract with the Philadelphia Phillies is Nick Castellanos, gets the 5-year, $100 million deal coming into this season. Castellanos last year for Cincinnati batted .309 with a .362 on base, .576 slugging, 40% above league average by WRC+. This year for Castellanos in 84 games, let's go ahead and give him credit for his two hits today.
Yeah.
.251 average, .298 on base, .378 slugging, an 88 WRC plus, meaning 12% below league average in the first year of his contract. Hard hit percentages dropped by 12%. Line drive percentages down 5.5%. Is this just a case of a guy trying to live up to his contract?
It's two things. I mean, again, the only time Nick has ever hit over 300 was last year, but he's always been a good hitter. You know what I'm saying? He was in Detroit. He was in Cincinnati. I've always liked this guy as a hitter and as a player. But again, what was last year? It was his contract year, right? And then what's this year? Now I got paid, so it's easier to relax. The other thing is, and this is completely off topic and irrelevant to anything, he bought Ben Simmons' house, and that's got to be bad luck because Ben Simmons doesn't want to play anyways and is lazy, right? So the juju and the mojo of buying that house was probably really bad for Nick Castellanos.
Well, I mean, look, and the thing of it is, too, you know, obviously we know, we've seen this play out throughout the course of the year, that the park factor in Cincinnati is very good for offense, but it's not bad in Philadelphia either.
No,
and he's just jokes. A guy that's not performing here at all.
Yeah, with more protection, actually, there this year as well. But again, it's like there is that relaxed. Remember Pablo Sandoval, and I'm not comparing anybody in Nick to Pablo Sandoval, but he got that 95 whatever million dollar contract from the Red Sox, and we still have never seen him.
Well, we got two segments left to go here on the Run Line, and we already talked about some buy and sell leading up to the All-Star break. Let's do some buy and sell for the second half here as we take a look at some yes-no playoff odds for some of the interesting contenders out there, including the hottest team in baseball, the Baltimore Orioles. So come on back here on the Run Line, VSiN's premier baseball betting show.
You found VSiN's premier baseball betting show. This is the Run Line.
Ice cold beers, cold hard cash. Join the action on the pitch with the Heineken 2022 Soccer Prediction Challenge. Compete in 20 free-to-play pools this season for your shot at a share of $100,000 in total cash prizes. Head to DraftKings.com/Heineken now to start your run at victory. Heineken, beer made better. 21 and over only. Terms and conditions and other eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details, and always drink responsibly. Back here on the Run Line, Adam Burke, your host tonight, alongside former Major League Baseball pitcher Josh Towers. And Josh, you know, we were talking about how interesting it was here with a couple of closers in the middle innings here in this Yankees and Red Sox game. Caleb Ort, called up from the minor leagues, makes his debut, throws an inning and two thirds to kind of bridge the gap here. The Red Sox did end up going with Sawamura coming out for the sixth. They are a -125 live favorite now. Total, live total, 15.5 juice to the under. But this should be pretty interesting because I believe we've got Aroldis Chapman in here to pitch the sixth.
Yeah, I'm curious, man. Again, you know, Aroldis is different because this stuff is so exceptional, but you take these guys out of their role. Like, again, bring Aroldis Chapman in a one-run game and he's winning, and it's the real guy we know. You bring him in a one-run game, they're losing just to get work, and there's something about that. There's like an energy, like, depletion. And so you're putting him in a situation that he has no idea what this means. It could go one of two ways. I mean, give up four in a second and have no control, or he just happened to be back, right? I don't like it personally. I just don't get it. He's not saving anything right now for you. The back end of your pen without him has started to struggle. They were really good prior, but they've started to struggle. And for me, he's a vet. Like, if he can pitch the sixth, then he can close the ninth for me. Like, I don't know. I don't know what I'm curious to hear, you know, post game why this is what they're doing.
Well, I certainly wouldn't move Clay Holmes from the role that he's been in. Yeah. He's been outstanding. So I would definitely leave him. But also, too, and this is a discussion for another day that I'm sure you and I can have maybe over a couple of Blue Moons or Heinekens one day, but not a big fan of the defined bullpen role. So
as far as?
Maybe you and I will have to talk about that one day. Because if we do it now, it'll just end up hijacking the segment. But I do want to do a little bit of buy and sell here for the second half, taking a look at some teams that, you know, some that are playing really well, some that aren't necessarily playing so well, using their yes-no playoff odds as part of the equation here. And let's go ahead and start with the Seattle Mariners. 6-5 win today over a Toronto team that's just completely dragging right now. They have not had many off days of late. They're a team that's really, really struggling. Their pitchers are having a hard time. Their offense has gone back in the tank again. They're not hitting with men in scoring position. That's been an ongoing problem for them. But the focus on the Mariners here, because it looks as though at this point, Josh, they are the second-best team in that American League West. They're now 44-42, two games over 45-42, actually, three games over 500. Same record now, interestingly enough, as the Toronto Blue Jays. Are you buying this Seattle team or selling them?
Well, I think they were always the second-best team. I mean, whoever came into the season thinking the Angels were going to be good, it's just wishful thinking, and you're probably just a fan. You want them to be good. We knew Oakland was going to be awful, and Texas hasn't shown us anything that makes them contenders yet. I'm actually surprised Texas is only five below five. Seattle has been good for the last couple of years. They went and added a lot of pieces, good pieces, but they kept a lot of the pitching the same, and it felt like the bullpen's pretty consistent. It does take guys time to gel, and all the guys they went and got from like Cincinnati, Suarez and Winkler and them, it takes time to gel a little bit. And I think they're better than Seager was, but they also got rid of Seager, who was a big clubhouse presence. And so I think this team is finally like comfortable, but not too many different pieces. And the pieces that are new, they're getting, again, comfortable. So I think this team was always the second best team and always – I mean, we looked at the Central, we all said the White Sox, and then we question marked everybody else, and we weren't 100%. And so we got to get some playoff teams that we really think four were going to come out of the East, possibly, for sure. But, so Seattle was always close. So I think Seattle, for me, is a buy and was a buy.
Robbie Ray, good start yesterday. Logan Gilbert, as I mentioned, kind of struggled a little bit, but the Mariners have really unlocked Robbie Ray, and then that's a huge part of it for them. As I talked about earlier in the regression report, I do have some concerns long-term about Marco Gonzalez. Yeah. About Chris Flexen, about Logan Gilbert,
who 100%
you know, kind of saw some of that regression here today. But look, I mean, they're at Washington Tuesday, Wednesday, then they're at Texas for a four-game set for the weekend. They could keep this rig rolling and, you know, really put themselves in a good spot here. So do you think they can make the playoffs over one of those AL East teams?
I do think it's possible. I think they have the team to do it. And again, they may not get as much pub, but on paper they're pretty similar to a lot of these teams. I mean, they have better overall like names, let's say, than Tampa Bay. They're playing better baseball than Toronto. Toronto has these big names, but they're also, are the names all earned as far as like what they've done on the field? And then you got Julio Rodriguez, who stepped up and had an amazing year, which you need young guys to do every now and again in Seattle. But then you got Gavin Biggio, who's hitting like .190 and not participating in. And Teoscar, is it Hernandez, who had a career year last year, can we really expect him to drive in that many runs every year? And so, like, again, I need people to I can't just put all the reliability on certain guys, and Toronto's pitching is 100% not getting it done. I mean, they're 1-9 in the last 10. Who would have thought that?
Yeah. Well, like I said, I mean, they've had virtually no days off, so just kind of hitting the wall a little bit. We'll see if, you know, they have an off day tomorrow, and then we'll see if they can kind of regroup during the All-Star break. But the Chicago White Sox, you know, looking at some of their recent odds to make the playoffs, were -115 or so. They were actually a favorite still to make the playoffs, which, to your point about the Twins earlier, not a whole lot of belief in Minnesota still, even though they have that comfortable division lead.
Yeah.
Do the White Sox figure this thing out? Are they a bye team in the second half for you?
Yeah. Again, they're 2.5 out of the wild card. There's a lot more teams, but we added more spots. They're not that far back on Minnesota. And the White Sox, we really can't say anything positive on. I mean, they're 5 games back. That's 2 series. I mean, that's an 8-game win streak, like what we see Baltimore and Seattle doing in a little slump for which Cleveland's 2-8 in their last 10. Minnesota's 5-5 in their last 10. The White Sox only picked up 1 game in that stretch, right? But it can happen that fast. In a baseball season, because we play 162 and we're about halfway, we're pretty close to halfway right now. So I do believe the White Sox are it. Lance Lynn's back. He's starting to pitch. Dylan Cease is having a better consistent year than we expected. Now we have other guys that need to show up, and they have offensive players that need to show up. They need to get a lineup on the field that's the same lineup day in and day out. And then I don't see Tony La Russa going anywhere at this point. So the fans need to get off his back and stop creating a bad vibe. I think a lot of the reason White Sox are losing is Tim Anderson is a good player, but a distraction right now away from the field. And I think the fans are their biggest enemy, and they're not an ally. And the fans need to get on support with his team.
Well, I've definitely been vocal about wishing Tony La Russa would go, but I also know it's not going to happen because
it's too hard.
You know, he's very close to Jerry Reinsdorf as well, which is, you know, a whole nother discussion. But
they're not playing. They're not the Angels. Like they're not playing so bad. They're 2 games below .500. Like, you're not going to let go of your manager at this point,
right?
It's just maybe at the end of the year they don't like it, but
healthy.
That was the biggest thing. They came in dinged up, and they have been dinged up the entire time.
All right, so let's talk about Baltimore Orioles here. Yeah. And look, I don't think that they have enough in the tank to sustain this and end up being a playoff team. But you could have gotten them around 40-1 to make the playoffs. Here over the last couple of days, They're one game under 500 now. They've won eight in a row. You and I were talking about how good the pitching staff is, specifically the bullpen, during the last break. And now the offense is catching up. They're starting to hit. They're starting to make much better contact quality. They're starting to hit for a little bit more power, particularly on the road. I can't buy them to make the playoffs, but I said this in my article a couple of weeks ago. Any game that has a toss-up line where they're in a short favorite role or a short dog role, their bullpen's so good, they're almost worth betting.
Again, a complete opposite. So they finally started to put people in. And I think I said a tweet last year when they were god-awful. I'm like, listen, as soon as they – my son told me the other day, he goes, you need to retweet this and show people what you said. And I was like, I'm not digging it up. And he told me it was something very like, as soon as they learn where everybody's supposed to be, they're going to be a pretty good team. And like we were talking off air, Aiken's not a starter. At least he's not right now. They put him in the bullpen. He's more comfortable. He's doing a good job. Dean Kramer needed more time, and he was getting rocked. And this injury that started this year put him in a position to go to minor leagues and slow everything down as a big leaguer in the minor leagues. And this dude is locked in, and he has really, really good stuff. I call him Sammy Watkins. I know it's Spencer, but his story was great. He came up and did well, and then I felt like they put him in a position to fail, and now they're trusting him, and he's doing really well for them. They love Lyles. I think one of the biggest additions, and it's not because he's the number one prospect in baseball, is Adley Rutschman. And the reason I say this, and I said it again the other day, every time they throw a successful pitch or get out of an inning or something, he's given that fist pump like, yeah. Like he lets me know that I'm actually doing a good job. And then instead of meeting him in the dugout, he meets me at the line and gives me a hug. Like Adley Rutschman's energy to this pitching staff has been fantastic. Ryan Mountcastle, when he gets in the box, he has this look now that he knows he's going to light you up. And he didn't have that look before, but he's always been that talented. Austin Hayes is having a good year, and we can't overlook what he's done. Like, Mateo defensively and obviously has been one of the best in the game, defensive runs saved. Like, they're just doing all the right things right now.
Well, they have an off day tomorrow, so they won't be able to continue the winning streak. But we do have 10 games on the card for Monday, as we start off the last week here of the first half. We'll break down as many of those as we can get to in the final segment here of The Run Line, VSiN's premier baseball betting show on the Sports Betting Network.
You found VSiN's premier baseball betting show.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Run Line.
VSiN Summer Special is here. For only $19, you get everything VSiN has to offer from now to the end of July. Sign up today and you'll get VSiN's daily best bets, including Adam Burke's daily MLB best bets. That's mine, and I write it Monday through Saturday over at VSiN.com. NFL preseason coverage, premium articles on golf, UFC, and NASCAR. College Football Betting Guide comes out the last week of the month as well. If you want the full VSiN experience, which features a daily best bets email, every edition of Point Spread Weekly, use of our betting tools, and a live video stream whenever you want it, costs only $19 to be a subscriber through July 31st. Sign up now over at vsin.com/summer. Back here on the Run Line, one segment left to go. We're going to take a look at tomorrow's card, including a few really, really good pitching matchups that are on the board here. But I can tell you are itching to mention this Red Sox and Yankees game here. Aroldis Chapman in the game. Red Sox, a minus 215 live favorite, total 16.5. Bases loaded, one out in the bottom of the sixth.
I wanted to ask you, whose body language says I don't want to be here more, Aroldis Chapman or Bobby Dalbec? Bobby Dalbec, he probably sees his name in a lineup and is like, oh my God, please don't play me. I'm god awful. I can't hit anything. Do you see that 3-2 pitch you just swung at? Nice. Even in, you got the base.
I heard you chuckling over there.
The ball was a fastball that almost hit his knee and he swung at it as if it was a slider that started over the middle. Like, there's no clue or no game plan right now. Like, again, we struggle so much at different times where I can't get an out to save my life or where I feel like you can't get a hit to save your life as a hitter. And that's where Dalbec is right now. Like, we've been watching Chapman and not looking at the pitching coach when he walked away, just looking in the space like he didn't care. He doesn't want to pitch the sixth inning. But watching Bobby Dalbec in a situation with the bases loaded, no outs, 6-6 game, you got a guy on the mound showing you all this, and he's just not going his way. And you basically bail him out. It's unbelievable to me.
Well, some interesting pitching matchups, as I said here, for the Monday card. Again, we have 10 games, two of them being a doubleheader between the Tigers and the Royals, so must-see TV there with those. But Phillies and Cardinals, I think, is a really interesting one here at Busch Stadium. Aaron Nola on the bump for the Phillies. Miles Michaelis going for the Cardinals, a guy having an outstanding first half. He had that almost no-hitter where he threw 129 pitches. Hasn't really shown any ill effects from it here for the most part. This game, kind of a toss-up. Some places have the Phillies a slight favorite. Some places have the Cardinals a slight favorite. Some have minus 105 going both ways here. Total of 7.5 for this one. What do you think? Aaron Nola, Miles Michaelis.
Yeah, I think the look at the standings real quick. I think the Cardinals, like, it just seems like they're 3-7 in the last 10. That's probably why. The Cardinals on the money line, they seem like they haven't been getting any respect lately. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like Philly's playing well. I still feel like at home the Cardinals should be a better team, but they're not really favored like it. And then they did come back and win that game today. Look at this. He's going to get out of this. No, he did it again. You got to be kidding me. Bro, are you watching this?
I am.
Whoever bet this, if it's not going your way, I apologize. you can tweet. Don't tweet DJ LeMahieu for the mistakes that he's made this inning. Tweet the outfielders for not calling him off, by the way. Again, if Judge calls LeMahieu off in the first play of the inning, it's a routine fly ball for Aaron Judge. This doesn't happen to Chapman. And now, look at LeMahieu's. That's the one thing in communication. DJ is doing a great job of calling it right away, but you don't call a ball right away. You got to make a circus catch on. And these outfielders, both of them, Hixie and Judge, pulling up, they got to recognize this immediately and take control of this play. And this is what we don't see the Yankees doing. This is what we see losing teams doing. Again, Philly was winning, kind of gave up three late the last three innings of the game today, and the Cardinals came back and won. It was a much-needed and big win. This is a good pitching matchup. I mean, Michaelis has been the guy we saw a couple years ago. Aaron Nola's been the guy that we've pretty much expected. He's also gone 7 or 8 in his last, what, 6 starts? Like, he's been that locked in and that good. So I don't know what I expect from this game, except for as a fan of pitching, I expect an awesome watch.
I do think I like the Phillies' first five in this game because Aaron Nola's a guy, we talked about the third time through the order splits earlier on in the show. Yeah. His command becomes an issue the third time through the order. He will give up some home runs. He's very, very good the first and second time through. I don't have a high projection of the Cardinals against above-average right-handed pitching this season because for them offensively, everything goes through Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt, and Nola does have the upside and the talent to shut them down. So I do like Philly's first five a little bit in that one. I'll see if that ends up being a play in the article. But how about this one? Mets and Braves. Max Scherzer and Max Fried. What a pitching matchup this is in this one. And a very important series and very important game for both of these teams here with the fact that the Braves have closed this gap so much. And in fact, you look out there in the marketplace and the Braves are favored against Max Scherzer.
They should be. Again, Sandy Alcantara, but the Mets didn't score today, but that's with the grain of salt because he's, you know, arguably the best in the game right now. Max Fried, 0-1-2-1. He mixed in a four spot, 1-0-1-2. Like, he's been dominant. The same Max Fried we saw the second half of last year, I think early year before. He has been absolutely dominant on a team that has come all the way back again, but earlier this year, they're only 1.5 back of first place. So you got the Braves playing well. The Mets started to slow down, but you know they are 6-4 in their last. And this is again the luxury that they afforded teams is they played so well that they allowed Max to get healthy, and they're allowing Jacob to get healthy, and they're still in the thick of it. Max was obviously very good his first start back, but they didn't score for him either then, right? So it's one of those things where we know the offense for Atlanta's better than the offense for the Mets, and we have two pitchers that are equally as dominant. So in this situation, the Braves should be, and at home, right, should be slightly favored.
Yeah, Scherzer coming on his first start in about 6 weeks at the MLB level, only threw 79 pitches. They probably wanted to keep him around 80 or 85 or so, but he had 11 strikeouts over six innings.
He's good.
On 79 pitches. So, yeah, it turns out he's pretty good. Might be in Cooperstown one day.
Oh, he better be.
I think it's a really tricky. Oh, he will. He'll be a first ballot guy for sure. But
gosh,
I think it's such an intriguing handicap, too, because – you know, the Braves have gotten healthy hitting a lot of bad pitching. They had that big, was it 14-game winning streak where they played absolutely nobody of consequence. The one thing I've noticed with the Braves offense on a day-by-day basis, and this is true of every offense, but especially theirs, when they face guys with swing-and-miss stuff, they have a lot of guys that swing-and-miss. It's kind of the trade-off when you got a lot of guys with power that make a lot of quality contact.
For sure.
Scherzer's a guy that definitely can rack up the swing-and-miss. So even though you're playing down in Atlanta, it'll be hot. It'll probably be humid. Balls should carry well. I don't know if there's going to be a whole lot of balls in play for either offense in this game.
Listen, as a hitter, you kind of want these days off. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right.
There's certain players you just don't want to face. And again, Max is one of them. And he's the guy, like, as the game goes on, he gets stronger and stronger. We got a couple good pitching matchups tomorrow. I don't even know. Atlanta's in such a good spot, and New York is happy to be back following Max Scherzer, but they're just not.
Do you feel that pressure when a team's chasing you down like that? Do you think that's something that affects?
No, it's too early.
Okay,
it's way too early. Like again, you go to Fenway, and every like you see the left field wall, and it has our standings for our division, and so you know the reality of what's going on. But be honest with you, like we don't look at a lot of things very often. We just show up and do our jobs and prepare, and try to figure out how we're going to win this baseball game today. And then at some point, as the season goes on, we'll take a peek at the like what we really need to accomplish. But like, you know, all these winning teams know like the most minimalistic goal is we got to win today, right? Or I'll even simplify more. Let's win this inning. But the reality is all these winning teams just want to win the series. How can we win the series? And if I do that, it's going to take care of itself. So they don't. No one's staring at the win loss column right now more than the front office. That's it.
One more game I want to get to here. We got a couple minutes left on the show. White Sox and Guardians, and I'm not getting to this just because I'm a Guardians fan, but because I think it's a really interesting handicap here where Lance Lynn, a slight favorite on the road in the -115 range. This one has got a total for you of 9 with a little bit of overjuice on that one. Lance Lynn's made 5 starts. He's given up 19 runs on 29 hits since coming back, so he has not been particularly sharp. Cal Quantrill coming off of a bad start, gave up 6 runs on 8 hits in 4 innings against the Tigers, although only 3 of those runs were earned. But I watched Quantrill's interview after that game, and he was very upset, you know, saying, I didn't give the team a chance to win at all. Neither one of these guys in great form here. Do we see a high-scoring game in Cleveland?
I don't know. I mean, he went 8 innings and only gave up 3. Like, it doesn't really get better than that for a starting pitching. I mean, Quantrill. That was the start before, and then obviously he goes at Detroit and it's almost like a team that, like, when my defense isn't there, which it wasn't there, it's, like, easy to let down. But, like, that's where, as a starting pitcher, we have to man up and, you know, trying to pick up the slack for them. So I get what you're saying on that. Like, when I look at Lance Lynn, too, like, it's, you know, we're stoked to have him back. But, dude, like, it's small sample size this year. But in 3 home games, he's given up 5, 6, and 5. So, again, there's more going on in the White Sox, I'm starting to think, than we realize, right? And we saw the little dust up with our coach, and he played it off perfectly in the interview. Lance Lynn did about steaks, and he's a ribeye and, you know, whatever, a filet and Caesar guy. But this tells me there's a little bit more going on at home. So, I mean, in this situation, like, I know Cleveland's not playing well, we're still question marking the White Sox. Like, for me, it's a stay away, but I could favor Cleveland.
Well, we'll see what happens in this one. I think it's been a great show here. And, of course, next week we'll be talking a lot of things about the All-Star break. So great work by Brian Ortega and everybody behind the glass here on today's show. For Josh Towers, I'm your host, Adam Burke. The Look Ahead with host Scott Seidenberg coming up next on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.